Hello again, everybody. This is Lance Russell with Championship Wrestling with another big week. Join us right now.
Hey, it's Heath Mulliken from the Double Dropkick Show. I am joined by Robert Truesdale, a.k.a. Redbeard, founder of the Carolina Professional Wrestling Awards, and he just announced the winners on Monday, December the 12th, and I wanted to have him on the show just to talk about that. Robert, hey, thanks so much for being with us today.
Good morning, Heath. I appreciate you having me on the program.
So before we get started, talk a little bit about the whole, you know, Redbeard persona, your YouTube channel, and just your love for professional wrestling in general.
Oh, there's a story behind the Redbeard name, and it actually goes back, probably a good 12 to 14 years at this point in time, because I was associated with a independent group in Lancaster, South Carolina. And at that point in time, I was doing a little bit of writing on the side for them. I was doing their programs and whatnot, a little bit of web design as well. And at that point, it was big into the idea of people communicating online with a handle. You had some type of a gimmick to use the
right
wrestling vernacular term there. And I remember hearing an interview that Triple H gave at one point in time, wherein he made the comment, well, I came up in the business at the point where you had to be a clown or, you know, something silly along those lines, or a pirate is what he mentioned in there. And I'm like, oh, pirate. Wait a minute. I've got a red beard. Okay. Well, here's something we can use. And that's kind of the origin of where it came from. And I've had some type of facial hair since I was 16, 17 years old. So it played right into it.
So let's talk about the Carolina Professional Wrestling Awards. Can you talk a little bit about the history of those? I know there were some other awards before you started yours. Just trying to talk about the lineage of these awards.
You know, it's a really, in my opinion, tremendous lineage, because it goes back probably around 2005 or 6, the initial awards that we relate ourselves to, that being the Carolina Independent Wrestling Year End Awards. Those ran for around 7 years, and then in 2013, that was, I believe, their final year. It kind of dawned on a group of us, okay, well, we're not going to have an award to be presented this year, because the individuals who had been involved in that previously just kind of said, okay, well, we're done at this point. You know, we've put all this into it. We're just going to step aside. And in 2014, that was the original year that I became involved with the actual set of awards, and that was the Professional Wrestling Awards of the Carolinas. Very similar in terms of the process that we go through. Mm-hmm. And really, it was just a evolution in creating the Carolinas Professional Wrestling Awards, because the PWACs, as I call them, they ran for 1 year, and then they also kind of fell by the wayside. Excuse me. If it sounds odd, yes, it's because I have a cold at this point in time. But the CPWAs initially ran in 2014, and then 2015 we came back, and we're looking forward to continuing this on in the future with whatever comes next in 2017.
Yeah. So you talked about the process. How are how is the panel chosen, the actual people who vote on the awards, and then how do you guys determine the nominees for each award?
Well, we have a 7-member panel. We're a little bit different than a lot of awards in that we don't rely on fan voting. The panel is my responsibility, and that's something that I've gotten some criticism about, for the fact that there's been some talk of, the awards aren't inclusive enough, and you know, we may get into that at some point in time. But we do try to assemble a panel that has not only a group of people who are knowledgeable about the scene, but who also have some name value in terms of bringing attention to the awards. Mm. So we have a 7-member rotating panel. They come in and are recruited throughout the year, and they're usually around October to November we begin the nomination process, and everyone who's on the panel has an opportunity to bring in the candidates that they have for the various categories that we has our award set. And then from there, we go into the actual process of eliminating certain people and rounding out the final votes for each category. We have a a bit of math that we engage in. We take the total nominations and we round up to the top three in terms of who received the most nominations in each category. Those are our finalists, and then that's who gets voted on in terms of final voting. And it's been a pretty good methodology for so far. We haven't had any kind of weird scenarios come up just yet, but it's one of those things where we are always trying to, you know, keep the math in our favor in terms of not having a whole bunch of runoffs and whatnot.
So it's not quite as complicated as the old BCS system.
No, fortunately it is not. I would never hope to engage in something that cumbersome.
You said the award started in 2014. Who were some of the previous winners for, like, Wrestler of the Year, Feud of the Year, some of the memorable people that maybe have gone on to bigger and better things?
Well, the Wrestler of the Year in 2015 was the Southern Savior, John Schuyler. He actually captured a number of awards in that particular set. He was also involved in the Feud of the Year category, where he and Anthony Henry had what amounted to a blood feud between the two of those gentlemen. Tremendous. Excuse me, I'm using my mute button as we're talking here and I'm coughing. But we had a tremendous turnout in that set of awards, because not only were we able to award those two gentlemen with those awards, we also had the Bravado Brothers come in as Tag Team of the Year. Mm-hmm. Tessa Blanchard was the Female Wrestler of the Year, not only in 2015, but also in 2016.
Right.
Just been able to really recognize a lot of talent around the area. And one thing I'd like to point out is that when you start doing your research in a project like this, you really are forced to, if not before then, realize how much talent we have in this area.
Right.
And it's really amazing, because, you know, people, you know, the old adage is, okay, well, people will spend $40 at a WWE show, but they won't spend $10 to come to an independent show. And I really try to stress to people that, especially with the talent that we've had come up out of this area and get signed here recently, you know, doesn't matter if we're talking about Cedric Alexander, No Way Jose, Dash Wilder, Scott Dawson, any of those guys, it really does benefit you as a fan to go to these independent shows, to see this talent we have in this area, because guess what? They're looking here right now,
right,
for talent come up into those big leagues, because they know the talent is here. The tradition is here. And we're trying to be a part of that with the CPWAs as well, and celebrating the people that we have here, you know, the people who are just, I hate to unsell it or understate it, but who are just really putting their bodies on the line each and every time. Absolutely. They go into the ring. People are dedicated to the craft here in professional wrestling, and we want to make sure that they're respected and appreciated with these awards.
Well, we talk about, you know, it's easy to pick out the guys who have worked for NXT and WWE, but no matter what you think of TNA, you got Andrew Everett, Trevor Lee, Caleb Conley, all of these guys, Shane Helms, all these guys from North Carolina that are now on national TV every week. We've got, you know, this week, the final deletion on TNA that's going to have the Bravados, that's going to have the Ugly Ducklings, you know, two of the teams nominated for Tag Team of the Year.
That's right.
So, I mean, they are looking to this area. So, let me ask you this. You talked about doing research, and here's something that I've found. I would love your thoughts on this. When I'm trying to find out about wrestling in the Carolinas, there are so many of the organizations that have a tremendous product, but yet their online presence, they're not putting their matches up online. You don't really see results. And I can imagine that for what you guys are trying to do, that's got to kind of create a hindrance, because you can't see what everybody's doing. So I would love your thoughts on maybe what companies could do better to get their product out there.
Well, that's a great point, and it's sort of feeding into the concept of what we plan on doing in the future. And that being to sort of put the ball in the court of these promotions and saying, okay, well, we've gotten criticism for not being inclusive enough with these awards, meaning that we didn't maybe go see an event in some corner of North Carolina that had a guy on it who was, you know, a tremendous talent. Okay, we admit that. We can't be everywhere every weekend.
Right.
Obviously. It just doesn't work that way. But I think there are so many tools out there these days, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, all this stuff that people could be taking advantage of. And it's not necessarily your traditional web applications anymore. You're not talking about people going to, you know, prowrestling.com or whatever to see results. They're going to social media.
Right, right.
And I really think that a lot of promotions could be taking better advantage of things like YouTube. Facebook, I think, is a great tool as well, but I really think that YouTube is something that is a tremendous resource because it's not only a method of distribution. I like to think of it as a method of really historically cataloging some of this stuff because absolutely. I think all the time about, you know, think of all the matches that Ric Flair and Ricky Steamboat had that nobody saw except for those people who were sitting in that arena on that one night.
Right, right.
There
right.
might have been something that happened that was head and shoulders above whatever else they turned in.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think of it that way because there should be some way of holding on to this stuff. And that's what a lot of times whenever I go to a show, I try and record matches. Right. And it's, you know, it's not about trying to take money from somebody's pocket. It's about trying to make sure that the stuff gets appreciated and gets recorded for history. Because somebody may want to look back, say 10, 15 years from now, and say, you know what? That was me. I had an opportunity to compete with a Cedric Alexander
right.
or a Gunner or whoever else there. And, you know, because injuries happen, you have things happen to where a career may get ended. And, you know, I hate to put it that way, but that's one of these things. It's one of these mechanisms that, in my mind, makes it important to make sure all this stuff gets recollected and it can be put somewhere. Yeah. And, it, you know, I have a real historical look on things. You know, I collect things myself. I'm looking at your man cave there now and your collection of stuff that you've right. got behind you. You know, it's just one of those things to where I think it's important. And I think YouTube is a big example of something that people could be taking better advantage of.
Yeah. My thing in my role with Three Count Wrestling doing a lot of the media is I take that very, very seriously because, like you said, these guys are putting their bodies on the line. And for me to not capture the event, to not capture the match, to not capture the feeling of the crowd as best as I can, and maybe that's going overboard with how many cameras I'm using, but like I feel like if that guy is going to put his body on the line, then I can at least do everything I can to document that and put that out there and get their name out there. And because, like I said, they're working hard to make that to make that happen. What we tell our sponsors is you're not just sponsoring an event. This video is going on YouTube. You're not just sponsoring one TV show, one time slot. A video on YouTube lives forever. And so if you sponsor our event, your ad is going out there potentially to, you know, millions and millions of people, hopefully.
That's exactly right. The reach of YouTube is something else that cannot be understated as right. well, because, you know, this is one of the reasons why I am such a big fan of sharing matches on YouTube, because yeah. of the fact that, you know, in years past, you look at a product like a PWG or, you know, any of these that are out in the Midwest and whatnot, they've always had someone seemingly who was there and able to, you know, build the aura and the mystique of these right. promotions by way of sharing these matches. And, you know, a guy like a Super Dragon, for example, or an Excalibur or whoever else, their mythology is built off the fact that their matches were available online yes. and people could see them all over the world. And nobody was really doing that too well in this part of the world until a couple of years ago.
Right.
You know, I think of, you know, a guy like, you know, Bobby Houston or a KC McKnight or whatnot that I saw years ago in little rec centers in York, South Carolina. Of course, KC McKnight is now Scott Dawson in WWE.
Right.
But, you know, those guys put on tremendous matches. And unfortunately, a lot of it now, unless it shows up on High Spots Network at some point in time, is probably gone.
Right.
And that, to me, is a terrible thing. You know, it's one of those deals to where I wish that I had been a little more cognizant back then of recording some of this stuff. You know, I've got pictures, but, you know, pictures are a tremendous media, but video will always be what wrestling's bread and butter is built on.
Right. So I love, you know, things like the High Spots Network, you know, of course, the WWE Network. I just recently, you know, subscribed to Flow Slam. I know, I think it's some guys in North Carolina working on Powerbomb TV. But you mentioned, you know, PWG. I go back and watch some of their early shows from California on the High Spots Network. And you see, you know, they're in a smaller building, not too big crowds. The wrestling, I mean, still good. And you see what they became and what they are now. And it, you know, it makes me know it just takes time to build your brand. It takes time to build your product. It takes time to build your stars. And I mean, that's something that we're all trying to do. So as you think about the Carolinas, here are some that I think of, and there's a lot on the coast of North Carolina that I'm not as familiar with. I know they do a lot of, especially Wilmington, do a lot of conventions. I know Steve Carino has got his promotion down there. You've got, obviously, you know, PWX in the Charlotte area, CWF Mid-Atlantic, who I love their YouTube stuff.
Absolutely.
You got WrestleForce, Old School Championship Wrestling, which is down in Hanahan, Battle Zone, APW in Chester, who I think they're running every other week now.
They are. They run twice a month, basically. And, you know, I'll take a moment. I'd interrupt you, but
no, you're good.
I'll take a moment to point out, because I was actually just at APW in Chester here within the past couple of days. That is an example to me of a little building that's kind of in the middle of nowhere,
right,
that attracts some of the top talent in the Carolinas.
Yeah.
And they have gone a long way to make that something of a destination, because you're going to see a Zane Riley. You're going to see a John Schuyler.
Right.
You're going to see an Anthony Henry come through that building. And, you know, it's amazing to me that exists, I guess, in a lot of ways, because you hear them in PWX, you hear them in Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, all these different places that they appear at. And then people don't always think of a little building like, you know, APW in Chester, where you can go in for $10 and get a ticket. And then I always talk about the fan experience. For $3, I had a tray of hot nachos and an ice cold Pepsi. And
nice.
To me, that's perfect. Right. I can sit in the front row. The wrestling is right there. I got my drink. I got my nachos. I'm ready to go. Let's see some wrestling.
Yeah.
That's a great thing. It's a great resource and a great opportunity for people to come out and see stuff like that. But to expand on your point there as well, there is so much other stuff going on in the Carolinas right now. You've got things spread out far and wide,
right,
as you mentioned, from, you know, it doesn't matter if you're talking about Premier Wrestling Federation up around the Crystal Coast there, or, you know, Pure Pro Wrestling up in North Carolina. There's all kind of little. Of course, here in South Carolina, we have to adhere to the South Carolina Athletic Commission guidelines. We have a little bit more stringent box to work in. So in North Carolina, you kind of have the Wild Wild West. Here you have the SCAC doing more or less what they can't tell us, what we can and can't do is what it amounts to.
Right.
But that's one of the reasons why, you know, it's so much more interesting in a lot of ways to try and pay attention to North Carolina, because it's everywhere.
Yeah.
And just about anybody can run a show. But at the same time, I think that, you know, a lot of people have tried to demonize the SCAC in the past in terms of saying, okay, well, why do you require all these things and this, that, and the other? I think to a point you could say that they're damaging the scene, but at the same time, I think it keeps, and I'll go ahead and use the word riffraff, it keeps some of the riffraff out of the scene as well.
Yeah.
Because you could have some Tom, Dick, and Harry who says, okay, well, I got a ring. What is that ring made of?
Right.
You know, 4x4s and, you know, gosh knows what, garden hoses maybe or something like that. You ran a show.
Right.
Okay, sure. Who died during your event? But, no, the scene is great right now. There's opportunities far and wide for fans of wrestling to see events in this area. You know, we do a rundown. I try and do a weekly rundown with the Wrestle of Redbeard Midweek Update program on our YouTube channel to keep people abreast of what's going on in this part of the world. And it seems here recently that you could count on anywhere from, you know, 8 to as many as 15 events happening every weekend.
Yeah.
Some of those are in Georgia, but a lot of them are here in the Carolinas. So just, you know, a great time to be associated with the scene, to be involved in the scene.
And, you know, one of the best things about independent wrestling is just the interaction you get with the wrestlers. That they're Absolutely. Always, most of them are going to be at a table. They're going to have stuff to sell. But even that, most of the time we're dealing with crowds that are 100, 150 or less. And so you actually can have some really cool interactions with people. You can have, you know, it's not just a, hey, how you doing? I mean, you can kind of say, hey, I saw your match here. You know, would love to know what you thought about it. And so I really like that. So without further ado, let's get into the heart of these awards and the winners this year. All of these, of course, all the nominees very deserving, and all the winners very deserving. So let's start out. Who was the announcer of the year?
Ring announcer of the year for 2016 was the one and only Brett Wolverton. Brett is, of course, very well traveled. He's a respectable member of just about any locker room that you put him in.
Yeah.
Has a great presentation, a great presence in terms of his voice and his vocal abilities. And was very pleased to be able to get the award to Brent this year because he's someone who's been around for a long time and who is obviously a fan himself, but genuinely pours himself, I think, into every appearance that he makes as part of a ring announcer. Or, you know, sometimes he shows up as a manager occasionally, yes, as well there. You know, doesn't matter if it's BJ Hancock or somebody else there. He's a man who wears many hats.
Yeah, he just announced on Facebook maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago that he's moving out of the managing scene and just focusing on ring announcing. And we may have had his last match at 3 Count December 3rd. He was in BJ Hancock's corner for most of the match and then ended up in the ring and was on the wrong end of a frog splash. But that was great to see.
That's the thing about being a manager, you got to run the risk of, at some point in time, being in the way of a frog splash or something like that.
That's right. Now, referee of the year, this is just a tremendous story of this young man and just some of the opportunities he's gotten this year.
Really and truly, the winner of 2016 CPWA for referee of the year was Antrone Brewer. If you've watched WWE programming at all the past couple of months, you've likely seen him show up in some capacity. It doesn't matter if it's appearing as an extra or, you know, even as a referee during some of their events. He has the distinction of tending to a wounded Eva Marie during one of the scenes there as an extra.
Hey, I'll sign up for that.
Yeah, you know, that's a tough assignment there. But I don't know how he pulled that one. But, you know, you do what you got to do when duty calls. But you know, he's one of several examples that I can point to as someone who is a hard worker, who has, you know, dedicated himself and with his professionalism and with his attitude has really had a lot of opportunities come his way. He just recently even appeared down at Wrestle Force for one of their events. He's been, of course, a mainstay of PWX and other events in North Carolina. So he's everywhere, and he's really a hard worker and goes a long way to talking about his attitude and his character there as well.
Yeah. Manager of the year, this young man is actually a back-to-back winner of this award.
That is true. We have our first back-to-back winner of the CPWAs, and that is the Tommy Thomas. I tell you, when I first got wind of, after we had awarded him his original plaque, that he was carrying it around with him to events, I was like, that's not really something that's intended to be toted around at, you know, a ringside gimmick. But I had a chance to speak to him here not too long ago, and he said, well, the original was trashed. You know, I can't use it anymore. So we may have to look into giving him a stunt plaque here for this 2016 edition, because if he plans on using it this year, but we want to make sure that it's something that's going to last him the entire year and not, you know, go dead in the water two or three months into it. So we'll see what happens there.
I thought that was really cool. I was there, I guess, in February at the PWX show in, not Hickory. Where was that at?
Gastonia.
Yeah, Gastonia. Yeah. And I love the way that he, I mean, you could tell the award meant a lot to him, and the way that he just, he lived that all year, and now we got a whole nother year. We gotta see Tommy Thomas.
At one point, he even mentioned to me, "Oh, if I win this thing 2 years in a row, I'm doing the old Owen Hart, where, you know, he would come out with both of his Slammy awards." Yeah. He said, "Well, I'm going to do the same thing with my CPWAs if I win 2 years in a row." And unfortunately, the first one I don't think is going to be able to be used, but, you know, we'll figure something out there for him. But yes. He definitely was very appreciative of the first one, very much excited about it, and we're glad to have provided him a mechanism to continue to push his talents there as a manager.
Yeah. For feud of the year, you mentioned last year it was John Schuyler and Anthony Henry, and they had a blood feud. And a lot of times you talk about a feud ending in a cage or with a dog collar match. But the feud that won feud of the year this year, their end match was, I mean, if you've never watched it, I mean, if someone just said to me, "Hey, they had this match," I would be, "What? No, that's not possible." But talk about this year's Feud of the Year winner.
Yeah, really and truly, it's one of those things that you can only say is a achievement in and of itself, because of the fact that it talks so much about where these two men are as athletes. And we're not talking about wrestlers. We're talking about someone who just has the pure stick-to-itiveness and ability to go as long as they did in a match. We're talking about a match that went almost 2.5 hours.
Yes.
Okay. Think about the most rigorous activity you've ever done in your life, and now think about doing it for 2.5 hours. That gives you some sense of what these two men engaged in this match. Because I don't think people respect a lot of times just how much conditioning goes into being a professional wrestler.
Right.
But these two, you know, Trevor Lee's always been, I've watched him for a number of years here now. He's always been at the top of his game in terms of his cardiovascular abilities. Roy Wilkins, you know, they both pushed each other to the very limit in this series. They feuded over the CWF Mid-Atlantic title there. Just a beautiful progression of that feud there that was culminated with a match that I think will go down for the ages in terms of just them being able to have done what they did physically. You know, that's a tremendous achievement.
Yeah, you talk about the cardiovascular, and I don't think people realize, Mark Whitman and I say it all the time, it's a lot different running a marathon and being in a wrestling match, or being on an exercise bike and being in a wrestling match. It's just a whole nother level of conditioning. And to go, I get winded just getting in the ring.
Yeah. And that's, that's something people don't realize. You know, you're talking about not just having to, you know, walk around a ring. It's so much more than what people really anticipate, because you're not just talking about the physical aspect of it. You got to keep your mind in this whole thing as well here.
Right.
Because it's such a mental game. It's such a mental performance there, you know, and having to keep track of what's happening and when. So just kudos to those two guys.
Yeah. The gentleman that won Rising Star of the Year, I mean, that's a very appropriate award. The sky is the limit for this guy.
Really and truly, James Drake, the New Age Enforcer, somebody that has impressed me from the start of the year till now. And I think it's a little bit weird about this category, the fact that he won, is that the Rising Star as a title would kind of indicate, okay, well, he's fresh on the scene.
Right.
James Drake has been doing this for almost a decade, if not more.
Yeah.
You know, so he's not exactly a young pup when it comes to his contribution to the scene. However, this has been a breakout year for him.
Mm-hmm.
He's been able to work a lot of different promotions, capture a lot of titles, and really get eyes on him for the first time through his work in, you know, improving his physique, improving his work rate. Just a real testament, I think, this award is to where he, you know, was, say, 12, 14 months ago to where he is now. You know, you can look at his progression in his Facebook pictures and just see what he's done to better himself and to really have put a real seal on, you know, this body of work that he's had in 2016. He's one of those guys that personally, as a fan, that I always look forward to seeing.
Right.
And he's somebody that, you know, guess what? He's somebody that I will also pay money to see.
That's
so,
right.
You know, he's one of those top guys that he's got a lot of momentum going into 2017 here as well.
He is the example, the reminder that, a lot, you know, there's no such thing as an overnight success. But he, you know, if there's young wrestlers out there, as far as being the complete package of he has a particular look. He reminds me a lot of the Big Boss Man, and he moves. I mean, Ray Traylor, people forget he was a phenomenal athlete, phenomenal big man. And I think, you know, James Drake is just, he's a phenomenal wrestler. He does that moonsault. He's got that look, that character about him. And then if you've ever heard any of his promos, he is just a great talker.
He's excellent.
When he is doing a promo, you believe what he's saying. And I, you know, in this day and age, that's a lost art. I mean, we're recording this on a Tuesday. There were some promos last night on Monday Night Raw I didn't believe.
No.
But James Drake is one of those believable guys.
And that's, you know, you talk about someone who makes it believable. That's the thing about watching one of his matches or seeing one of his promos, is that he makes you believe all that stuff. You know, you talk about real and whatnot, but I don't question anything about his movements in the ring.
Exactly.
He's dedicated to stomping a mud hole in his opponent, whoever it may be. Now, I love that about him. I love the fact that, you know, you have that old school presentation with him. That is just tremendous. Really looking forward to seeing what he has in 2017.
Yeah. Yeah. Female of the year, a young lady who, she's got to be, when you talk about female talents, she's got to be at the top of the list as far as unsigned talents.
Really and truly. I don't think that there's any good reason why she shouldn't already be associated with some type of promotion.
Right.
In name value alone, she would bring a lot of value to her presence there, wherever she may wind up. We're talking about Tessa Blanchard, who, of course, is the daughter of the one and only Tully Blanchard. Just a tremendous talent, someone who, again, has worked a lot in terms of developing herself physically, works everywhere internationally. You know, she's been on tours of China and Japan, been all around the United States. And she's had opportunities to work with people like, you know, other second generation talents like a Rachel Ellering, for example, mm-hmm. who's, you know, Paul Ellering's daughter. And I think there's going to be an opportunity for her to open up soon. It may be one of those things where they're just waiting for a little bit more, I shouldn't say maturity, but maybe a little more polish on her skill set to where right. they could say, okay, well, now's the time. Now's your opportunity to come in, train with us, and be a part of, you know, an NXT branch, for example. Of course, you know, there's been talk of a potential a women's tournament along the lines of the Cruiserweight Classic that happened this past summer, coming up for WWE in the future. So maybe she would be a part of that there. There's so many opportunities for female wrestlers right now, period, because you've got a desire to see female wrestlers. And not because of, you know, TNA or whatnot that would have been associated back in the mid-90s or whatnot. Now these ladies are seen as legit wrestlers, legit combatants who can go in there and give you a match that's just as good as, you know, a couple of men. So it's a great example of that in her being a part of the scene here in the Carolinas.
I would love to see sometime down the line at a WWE event, hopefully a pay-per-view, a match between Tessa Blanchard and Charlotte Flair with their fathers in their respective corners. I would drive 4 or 5 hours to see that. I would pay money to see that. I hope that happens one day.
That's one of those things that we kind of have as a, you know, a dream scenario to have the lineage and the families represented there and say, wow, this is happening.
Yeah.
You know, because like you say, there's so much history there. It'd just be a great moment. It's definitely something that people would drive and pay money to see.
Yeah. So Tag Team of the Year is the team that won is such an interesting story. We mentioned the PWX show in Gastonia in February. And these guys were just part of a multi-man match. They were not a team at that point. Then you get to March PWX show, which featured War Games. Again, these guys in a multi-man match. But yet, over the course of the year, they not only formed a connection, not with just each other, with the fans, and here they are, 10, 11 months later, Tag Team of the Year.
That's a great example and a great, you know, recollection of where they've been in 2016 to have gone from not much of anything, you know, in terms of a cohesive unit to now just this example of a real powerhouse stable that formed naturally and, you know, is now, I'd say, one of the more sought after teams in the Southeast, you know, in terms of being willing to go just about everywhere. We're talking about the Ugly Ducklings. We're talking about Colby Carino, Rob Killjoy, and Lance Lude. Three guys who, you know, it's one of those odd things where you wouldn't have necessarily thought that 2016 would be the year that the Freebird rule comes back around.
Right.
But guess what? It kind of has between the New Day and WWE and, you know, these guys here. But just a tremendous story. You know, now they've got Mikey Golino there as their manager. And I think Mikey might have some competition in the Manager of the Year category next year.
Yes.
He didn't get a whole lot of attention this year, but I think through his continued work with the Ducklings there, he's probably going to be a contender next year. But we'll see what happens there. But no, the Ducklings are a great story. They are, you know, three guys who have worked a long time to get to where they are. And, you know, you've got an example, I think, in Rob Killjoy. They call him in some circumstances off-kilter Rob Killjoy.
Right.
I think he's probably one of the smarter people in the scene, to be honest with you.
Right.
Just in terms of his ability to, you know, put together matches and to continue this run that they've had. So it's a great thing for those guys. And, you know, I hate the fact that I've got to spend money on three plaques instead of two for the Tag Team of the Year. But, you know, what are you going to do?
Right, right. And, well, the one thing I really appreciate about the Ugly Ducklings that, again, young wrestlers should really look at is, number one, this wasn't a gimmick or an idea handed down from the office. This was something that was very organic, that they owned it, that they earned. They earned these opportunities. They earned this award, and they're cashing in on it. I mean, they're, like, you go and look at their merchandise. I mean, they are all in. And so if you're a young wrestler out there and you're not trying to work on ideas to get yourself known, and you're not trying to get stuff out there to make some money, I mean, they probably make far more money on the gimmicks than they do even wrestling. And I think for me, you know, as a wrestling fan, what the Ugly Ducklings, Killjoy and Carino and Lance Lute have done in 2016, it's a roadmap for...
It really is.
So
The term organic there was what I was looking for a moment ago, but that's a perfect descriptor for what these two guys, or what these three guys became.
So let's talk about our wrestler of the year. I mean, the guy who in 2016 was kind of... he was the poster child for everybody in the Carolinas, all wrestling fans. He represented our hopes and dreams of what could be, that one of our own, born and raised, who plied his craft here and then finally earned the opportunity on the biggest stage in the world. We were all happy that this young man got his opportunity, but also earned Wrestler of the Year.
And, you know, that's a great bleed in. And, you know, it's just a great story, because anybody who's ever encountered this guy, you know his attitude. You know the fact that he loves wrestling. You know the fact that he loves performing. And to have worked as hard as he has, to have made as many sacrifices as he has over the years to get to where he is, you know, it's just a great story. And we're talking about Cedric Alexander, who you know, we talk about people that, you know, you would pay money to see. And to me, he's one of the ones that would always be worthy of my money. Yes. Doesn't matter if you're seeing him in some little hall somewhere or if he's performing with WWE. You know, he's always going to give you a show, and he's always going to give you your top dollar's value in terms of what he's going to put out in the ring. I've seen so many matches with Cedric because he's been a part of the WrestleForce roster for a long time.
Yeah.
Worked down in Hanahan there a couple of times with PWX, of course, there. But it just, you know, I think of so many matches that he's had that I could say, wow, you know, that happened during that match. And people, you know, they talk about the lumbar check and the fact that he's got that move that just looks like he's killing somebody every time he does that move. I think back to, you know, last year, 2015, at a WrestleForce show where he hit Jet Black with that. It just looked like he had killed him. But Jet Black looked like he was dead in the ring. And, you know, it's little things like that that add so much to Cedric's persona. You know, he's a tremendous athlete, great look, can do anything in the ring, literally. But he's had so many match of the year contenders, and I'm not even going to talk about the match with Kota Ibushi there that was part of the Cruiserweight Classic.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that there blows everybody out of the water, in my opinion. But I point to a match that he had that was part of an AML wrestling card, to where it was him, Caprice Coleman, Caleb Conley, and Jason Kincaid. I could not wrap my head around this when I first heard this has actually been booked, because you know, Caleb and Cedric go back a long way. They were in a tag team 7-4 there. But then you've also got the fact that Caprice Coleman and Cedric have an association there and haven't been tag team in ROH for a long while.
Right.
And then Kincaid is one of these guys who I think is a diamond in the rough waiting to be discovered by someone.
Yes.
And that whole combination of talent there made for just a match that I could watch any day of the week and be thoroughly entertained by, just a tremendously athletic combination of talent. And just an example of why somebody like Cedric Alexander is the top star that he is these days. And I'm so proud of the fact that we were able to show him an amount of respect with this award because of the fact that, you know, he's earned it. I can't speak enough about him. You know, I'm a big fan. I'm sort of gushing about him at this point in time, as you can't tell. But,
oh, right, yeah.
You know, it's just it's a great story, and I'm hoping that he has continued success in WWE and whatever comes next for him as well there.
Yeah, I've seen over the last few years, had the privilege to call two of his matches, one against Caprice Coleman, one against Gunner. I've seen Cedric wrestle in front of 30 people. I've seen him wrestle in front of several hundred people. Now I've seen him wrestle on TV in front of millions of people. And each and every time, the effort was exactly the same. And I have so much respect for that. And he is, you know, so many guys, they let it go to their head. And Cedric has remained humble. And it's just been amazing to watch. I remember, you know, you mentioned the match with Ibushi. We live here. I live in Clemson, if you can't tell. We drove 3 hours to Hickory to see Cedric wrestle Zack Sabre Jr. And when I think about my matches of the year that I saw live, it's right there, because I think Cedric left his feet once in that match. He wrestled Zack Sabre Jr. style, and it was just phenomenal. And I think we all knew then, and I think I drove 3 hours because I didn't know how many more times I was going to get to see Cedric Alexander in that scenario.
And that goes back to what we were saying before there about, you know, taking the time to actually, as a fan, go to these shows, because guess what? You got a Cedric Alexander here now, but who's to say 2 months from now he's not got an exclusive contract somewhere else? And,
right.
Oh, well, your opportunity's gone.
Right. And I think as we end the year, everybody talks about, you know, WWE signing a lot of people. Well, guess what? If they sign a bunch of people, let's say from Ring of Honor or TNA, where's Ring of Honor and TNA going to be looking? They're going to be looking to the Carolinas. And you're right. I mean, there's so many of these young men and women that the clock's ticking as far as when you're going to be able to see them and in you know local setting.
Yep. So yeah, I look at a guy like a for example a Tracer X or a Timmy Lou Retton.
Yeah,
all those guys, you know, I think they're the next wave. They're the next ones who are going to get attention from somebody, and they're going to be, you know, here for a little bit of time, and then they're going to be getting contracts somewhere else. So come out to a show, folks. It's time to come see and support these guys.
Yeah, yeah, and it's, listen, you can't take your family to the movies and get popcorn for the price you can take them to a wrestling event. And also, when you're at the movies, the screen doesn't talk back to you, but somebody like James Drake will talk back to you. And
exactly.
There's no other live experience like professional wrestling. And, yep. You know, that's what hooked us all. Robert, before I let you go, and thank you so much, you know, for your time. If we were wrestlers, we'd be in trouble because we were supposed to go 30 minutes and we went a 60-minute Broadway. So, hey, I really do appreciate, I know you're not feeling well, your son's been sick, but I appreciate your time today. Before I let you go, just kind of share where people can connect with you online, social media, and see your YouTube show every week.
We have our multiple opportunities for you to catch up with us. We've got the Wrestling with Redbeard Facebook page there that you can go to search Wrestling with Redbeard. It's RASSLIN with Redbeard. And that's our sort of our primary page there for our YouTube channel and whatnot, where we share information and whatnot that we've got about the upcoming events that are going to be happening in this part of the world. But we also have the Carolina Wrestling Award Facebook group page, which you can do a search for that as well, and it'll come up there for you. Be glad to get you guys to link with us and to join in the group. We are always looking for more opportunities to reach more eyes, because that's the way these awards will continue to grow, and the tradition and hopefully the anticipation for these awards will continue to grow over the years as well there.
Yeah. Well, all the links to where you can catch Redbeard will be in the show notes at DoubleDropKick.com and on the YouTube video. If you're listening to this on the Double Dropkick show, don't forget, you know, subscribe on iTunes and give us that 5-star rating. That we want the Meltzer rating, the 5-star rating. And subscribe to our YouTube channel, because we're doing some different stuff like this. We normally don't do interviews, but I appreciate, you know, Robert's contributions to wrestling in the Carolinas and carrying on this great tradition with the awards. And I hope to find out when you're presenting these awards, and would love to be there live and get some interviews with some folks.
Yep, we will be making announcements, because we're probably not going to do it just at one show. We're probably going to spread this around, but we'll be making announcements regarding where we'll be appearing to hand out the awards on the CBWA's Facebook page there. So pay attention to that in the coming weeks and months.
All right. Hey, thank you very much, sir. And we'll talk to you soon, all right?
Thank you, Heath. I appreciate you having me on the program.
All right.
And that's it this week, fans. So long for now.